Hey, I just want to say, as we begin this grand adventure, you're welcome in advance.
You're listening to the Backseat Sports Podcast with Zach Diodati and James Troiano.
Let's be honest, the bar is not real high right,
right
now.
Hey, that's quite a voice you've got there. You ever think about doing radio?
It sounds really cool.
No, it's not cool.
Can you bring a picture up?
Are you kidding me?
All foreigners love Chicago teams.
We do not have time for this kind of silliness.
A lot of booze, parties, women showing you the goods for beads. It doesn't get any better than that.
Smooth. Very, very smooth stuff. Very classy. I'm learning a lot from you right now, dude.
When I heard about this, I wanted to come up with some kind of articulate and thoughtful and, you know, well-debated response. This is just stupid.
Email us at backseatsports@gmail.com or hit us on Twitter. @BackseatZach or @BackseatJack.
Ah, you are back in the backseat, the Backseat Sports Podcast. I'm Zach Diodati alongside Adam Tully. And we've got James Troiano on the phone because he's having a rough Mother's Day. Got a flat tire on his car, couldn't make it down inside the perimeter inside Atlanta where we record our show because, his car is giving him some grief. And Tully, you got some grief this morning.
I did.
From a unbelievable day in the English Premier League, the last day of the season.
It is, yeah.
And for those who are familiar with EPL, they know the situation. They know what was going on coming into this day. But basically, Manchester United, your hometown team,
yep,
and Manchester City, the equivalent of the Red Sox pre-2004 in the EPL. Maybe not even that good.
Maybe not because it's the same city.
maybe not even that good. They both had a chance to win the league, but Manchester City kind of had the upper hand.
Well, they did because they had goal differential. They were first because they had a goal differential.
Basically, United had to win, and Manchester City needed to. Well, they could guarantee it with a win, but so it didn't work out for Manchester United. Manchester City won their first league title since 1968.
68.
This morning, and it reminded me. Mm-hmm. Okay, of a episode that we had a few weeks ago when James and I accused you of not being happy for your friends when their teams win and kind of jabbing them a little bit instead of being sympathetic when their teams lose in a big spot. Now, let's get a flashback right here of that episode.
It's not a story. It's just that this guy just cannot handle anything good happening for like anybody else.
I know. James, you know how whenever one of our teams is on the verge of a championship, we usually call each other and say, man, you know, I really hope they win it for you.
Yeah.
And with Adam, it just doesn't work the same way.
No, it's like that general feeling of like wanting to see good things happen for the people that you're close to.
Listen, no.
And
with the Gators, come on.
James, you're on the line with us, right?
Yeah, and can I just say, being on the other side of these phone calls, you two sound absolutely spectacular over the phone.
Do we sound sexy? I was kind of worried about that. I'm glad somebody said that.
Yeah.
All right, now that's the last compliment you have to give Adam for the rest of the night, because as you heard yourself say in that soundbite, you don't think he likes to see good things happen for his friends in terms of sports. So what did it feel like for you knowing that he was going through agony this morning?
Look, I woke up this morning and I got to my computer and the games had already started this morning. And it was early in the games, and the first person that I got a text message from this morning was Adam Tully. And what he starts it off with a little feeler text, hey, are you watching those games this morning, man? Yeah, I'm watching the games. Yeah. So I text him back. I'm like, yeah, I'm gonna watch the games, man. He's like, oh, you know, we a lot on the line. And then Adam proceeds to periodically text me throughout the morning with updates on the Man City Manchester United game.
And other games, because you, being a Newcastle fan, you were keeping up too. You had a lot on the line.
Those were like patronizing texts.
They were not.
Newcastle.
They were not. I was letting you know how Arsenal was doing, because that impacted your game.
No, it was patronizing.
It was not.
It was patronizing, and you were trying to get me interested in what you thought was important, which was the race between Man City and Manchester United.
Well, it was.
Like, you were trying to get me up and be like, yeah, man, like, I really hope, I'm really pulling for Man U. Well, let me tell you something. Nobody was pulling for Man U. Except
oh,
for
absolutely
Man U
not.
Fans.
No, nobody wanted to see us win. I know that.
Oh,
nobody did.
I did.
Well, yeah, only because of Manchester City's sponsor. That's about it.
Yeah, no.
But
I mean,
it's, nobody, everybody. Okay, listen. I'm going to pull a little page out of Zach's book here. Whenever a Bulldog fan tries to get in his face about the Gators, you know, right?
Right.
Okay, we've won 19. 19. They've won 3. We'll share.
Okay. No, okay. But that's
can't,
not. That,
we can't win every year.
Yeah, no.
Somebody
else
is not
winning. You shouldn't feel. I think the.
That's a shitty attitude. Excuse my language. That's a bad attitude.
Yeah, well, go ahead and bleep that.
You share and you won't, and you just concede that you can't win it every year. That's what you're saying now.
We can't. What are we gonna do? You can't win every year. We can't do that.
I heard Ian Dark and Steve McManaman, who were calling the game for ESPN, yeah, say when the game was over, "Is this the official start of a new era of dominance for City?" I think that
started like maybe a year or two ago when they actually really started spending money when they were bought by that Saudi prince. Or
right.
I mean, yeah, it's common sense. If you have money in the club and you can buy the players to make it happen, yeah, of course it is.
Let me say this. Manchester United fans, players and coaches are so upset that Man City won the league. Absolutely. That they're like the little kids that are like in denial, or like the they're actually like the ex-girlfriend or boyfriend who actually misses you but doesn't want anybody to know it and acts like they don't.
You should have seen my dad.
Goes out of their way to say things. Sorry, my dog's barking in the background. goes out of their way to say things to make you try to believe that they don't care, like Sir Alex Ferguson today going like, "Oh yeah, well, we're not concerned about a dominant Man City in the future." Well, why aren't you concerned? They have better players than you. They just won the league over you, and you just couldn't get it done.
Yeah,
so,
but Jay,
I think
we couldn't get it done. By 7 goals? It's the first time in the Premier League. Mm-hmm.
Surely no one has ever ended up with 89 points and not won the league.
Right. Well, you know, Ferguson said today, he's like, I said at the beginning of the year, 86 points will do it.
Well, it didn't.
Well, we're at 89 and that didn't do it. And yeah, like I said, it was the first time that the league has been decided by goal differential.
James, wouldn't you agree, though, that it is better and better for the English Premier League's stature as far as fan viewership in the U.S. if more and more teams have the money to compete? I mean, we grew up with like 3 teams with the ability to really compete. Arsenal, Manchester United, and sometimes Liverpool was up there. And then Chelsea got rich.
Yeah.
You know, Chelsea got bought. And so now that some of those teams, sounds like James has something going on there. But James, now that more and more teams have money, isn't that better for American viewership?
No, I don't know. I don't think so. Because I think it's all relative. You have pretty much every American soccer fan that invests in watching the English Premier League,
right,
they pick a team and they pull for that team. So what it might do for the EPL is it might broaden the amount of teams that they follow. But if you ask most soccer fans, most of them will say that they like one of the teams that is traditionally in the top 3 or 4 every year,
yeah,
Chelsea, right, Arsenal, Manchester United,
Liverpool,
and Liverpool.
Yeah,
right. And Liverpool had a terrible year this year.
They did.
And they don't really their prospects don't look that high going into next year. And there's some other teams that really look like they're on the up and up, like Everton, which is also in Liverpool for those of you that don't know, and then Newcastle, which is the team that I prefer, and Tottenham.
Tottenham.
And those
are
3 teams that aren't really traditional powers. You know, they're usually pretty good, but they're not traditional powers by any means. So I think it helps those teams, but as far as overall viewership, other than days like today when you have the high drama of pretty much everybody, even if you're not a soccer fan, was watching ESPN because they were intrigued by what was going on.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if it will increase the regular viewership.
Yeah, I mean, I got 2 things. One, in answer to Zach's question, it's yes and no. I don't agree with the amount of money that is, because there's no cap, obviously. I mean, it's ridiculous the amount of money that one club can spend. And I don't think that's fair. There's no, I thought we were talking about the NHL the other week about how it's so even now.
It is.
Because any team can win because everybody has technically the same amount
like
of
since,
money.
Since the lockout, every team in the NHL, except for the Red Wings, has been sucky at some point.
Yeah, it's a bit kind of a diversity. In the Premier League, not so much.
Right.
It's the Manchester United, obviously, because they've 19. Or it's the Liverpools, the Chelseas, the Arsenals, and it kind of just rotates through those guys now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So
I don't think it's new. It's good to have some parity.
It is, but like it's just kind of Manchester City just thrown into the heap.
James, speaking, coming back stateside and speaking of a team that's been on the up and up and has been trying to make their mark kind of in terms of being a dynasty in baseball, the Texas Rangers have been AL champions the past couple of years, and they're looking pretty good this year, specifically with Josh Hamilton. James, I'm starting to think the only guy that can stop this man is himself.
Yeah, and the thing, I actually am sitting here in front of the screen getting ready for this Sunday night baseball game.
Right.
And I saw they flashed the stat on the screen. Josh Hamilton this season is batting .402 with 18 home runs and 48 RBIs. And all three of those lead the major leagues. And it's like it's not even really that close. And what he's doing is so amazing because he's hitting for average and power. And
yeah,
he's driving in runs. He's doing it all.
And his slugging percentage has to be somewhere like .850 or something. But
yeah,
but
and look, I don't think there's any stop. I don't think there's anything that's going to stop him this year other than himself, like you said. And it, you know, he has a little bit of an injury history, and he's a little bit of a risk there. But if you really look at it, and if he can stay healthy, he might be in for an all-time type year.
Yeah, and I can't at this point. I can't. You know, when people our age were kids, we all remember the very exciting home run race in '98 between McGuire and Sosa. And by the summer, everyone knew they were on pace to both break Roger Maris's record of 61 home runs in a season. At this point, I can't even keep track of who has hit more than 61, but it feels like they were all on the juice. McGuire was juicing, Sosa was, Bonds was on steroids, and so it looks like Hamilton, if he stays healthy, is way overscheduled to hit more than 61, maybe even 70 if he keeps up this pace. So is this going to be a very meaningful year if, you know, if he has that kind of all-time year? Because from what we know and what we can tell, Hamilton isn't really part of that steroid area.
I don't. I think that the chances that he is using a performance-enhancing drug, or us finding out in the future, is a negative percentage. And I know that there's no such thing as a negative percentage, but he has a history of drug abuse.
He does.
And he has special rules, from my understanding, that are built into his contract and his agreement with the team, where I believe that the team is taking care of a lot of his supervision regarding those types of things.
Yeah.
And I think that this year is Major League Baseball needs this. They need a guy to break some of these records that we definitely know was not juicing. So people can stop talking about Mark McGuire and stop talking about Barry Bonds and wondering how they're going to look in the record books, because if somebody beats all of those guys anyway, it won't really matter.
Right, right.
Well, from the sake of maybe them getting in, the specific individual getting into the Hall of Fame, and whether or not you want to make that argument,
right.
Was everybody juicing? Who was juicing? But I think we've kind of reached a point now where, you know, baseball really wants to turn the page. I don't think they know how to do it.
Right.
And I think it's going to take players like Matt Kemp and Josh Hamilton to really transcend and do that for them.
I'm so glad you just mentioned Matt Kemp also, because honestly, James, I the steroid era, let's be honest, was, you know, in baseball used to be a sport where, you know, almost every player was American, and there has been this huge influx in the past 20 years of these incredible Latino players. But the steroid era and the performance enhancing drugs, that problem was an American-made problem. And so it's in a way, we did that to our own national pastime. And for me, guys like Hamilton and Kemp, American players, they're bringing this full circle. It's almost like poetic justice if they do what you just said and if they break these records after that steroid era.
Yeah, and it kind of I mean, it just goes back to what I said before. It kind of restores your faith in the fact that players can actually do this and put these kinds of numbers up without the shadow that they might be on something. Like, there actually is something to keeping yourself in really good shape and working out while you play baseball.
Right. I feel like it almost restores the romance to baseball.
Yeah, well,
from an American perspective.
People always, you know, for a long time, and they still do, you know, a lot of times, you see this whole thing with Josh Beckett and using, you know, you maybe being injured and then going golfing.
Right.
And, you know, just there's this persona, this aura around baseball that sometimes baseball players are lazy or don't take as good care of themselves.
Right, right.
You know, it just goes to show that taking care of yourself and being an athlete and treating your body like an athlete should goes a long way and pays off, as opposed to some of these guys that don't take as good care of their body. They break down, they get injured, and, right. and they stop being able to put up these kind of numbers after a while.
Yeah, the lesson may be coming full circle for every guy and every young boy who wants to be a baseball player and has been able to see what has transpired in the past several years. It may all be coming full circle here in 2012.
Let me ask you guys a question. I mean, do you think, because what I think I'm kind of seeing and this new generation of young guy that comes up, it seems like that these guys that are coming up now are athletes. Like, they're monster guys, and they could play a couple of sports. They're not these traditional kind of guys that you think of, guys like David Wells and Josh Beckett, who are just kind of like chubby kind of guys that just Lance Berkman, you know, they don't have these ideal body types. But now you have guys like Matt Kemp coming up, Bryce Harper.
I think Matt Kemp could play wide receiver for the Jacksonville Jaguars.
he really could. And I mean, Josh Hamilton looks like a big monster athlete.
Right,
and
right.
For a while there, it just seemed like Albert Pujols was kind of the prototypical keep yourself in good shape model of consistency, you know. But you're seeing it with these young players coming up now. They want to be more than just a good hitter, just more than just a good hitter, hitting for home runs. They want to be good defenders. They take their fielding seriously, and they don't want to spend a lot of time on the disabled list. So yeah, they're keeping their body in good shape. And I think it's great for baseball, because I think that's what has kept some people away from the game.
Right.
These past few years has been the perception that it's not a sport that's taken seriously by the players. And if you're not taken seriously by the players, why should the fan take the games as seriously?
Right.
But, you know, I think that luckily, you know, baseball's changing some of that, because, I mean, you and I have talked a lot about it, Zach, especially, you know, this year has been just a real fun year to watch, especially for you. You know, your Braves fan, the Braves are looking good this year.
Definitely.
And, I think people are, you know, more fans are going to start coming back to the game now.
James, we're going to roll on, and we're going to get with Nubias in a few minutes and talk about the NBA playoffs, but we appreciate you calling in, and get that tire taken care of, because we're going to need you down here next weekend.
Yeah, buddy, we miss you.
Yeah, yeah, and hey, guys, tell Nubias I said hi. I'm sure it'll be a great interview, and I look forward to hearing that when I listen to the podcast later on tonight.
All right, thanks, man. We'll bring you on back next week. Thanks.
All right, guys, take it easy.
All right, so James had some things to say about Josh Hamilton and some things to say about you this morning. So
I just like to point out that his team lost 2-3 and they finished 5th place. That's all. Just like to say, that's where Newcastle finished.
And it continues.
I'm just pointing out. Oh, and the Flyers got knocked out. And,
yeah, you forgot to mention that too.
We save some time there.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd also like to point out that the Flyers won just as many trophies as the Leafs this year.
That's always your
I like
your
success.
Argument.
We're
going to get with a Nubias Wilborn from 1100 The Game in Macon in just a few minutes. That's coming up next for the NBA playoffs, next in the Backseat Sports Podcast.
You're listening to the Backseat Sports Podcast with Zach Diodati and James Troiano. Email us at backseatsports@gmail.com or hit us on Twitter @BackseatZach or @BackseatJ.
Okay, we've got Nubias Wilborn with us from 1100 The Game in Macon. Nubias, as we briefly said, I think last weekend, the cream has really risen to the top in the first round of the NBA playoffs. I mean, things kind of went chalk other than the Chicago-Philadelphia series. That's a heartbreaker for Chicago.
Yeah, definitely heartbreaking for Chicago. As far as the rest of the cream rising to the top, it just goes to show you that the NBA never has or never will be a league of parity. There are certain formulas you need to win a championship, and one of those formulas, bottom line, is having at least 2 to 3 elite to star-type players. And if you really look at the teams that are in the playoffs at this point, all those teams pretty much have that. So that's what it takes to win in this league. You got to have stars, and this is going to be a great next couple of weeks for NBA fans. And I love the time from Mother's Day to Father's Day. And in the NBA, this whole month is going to be exciting, because you're going to see the best players play each other in really great matchups.
It's like the traditional holiday season in basketball.
Right.
Nubias, for those who aren't really familiar with the NBA structure, can you explain to us why in the Eastern Conference the 2 seed is playing the 3 while the 5 is playing the 8?
Well, it's just simple. Basically, they switched the division matchups to make it more fair. You have to remember that the Hawks were actually the fifth seed, but really were the fourth seed based upon the division championships. And a lot of this just goes by record. So the NBA tries to make it where their series are more exciting and put the teams not just based on winning divisions, because the division doesn't matter as much. Right. It matters a lot more about your record. So I think it's good for the NBA.
Right, right. So the Celtics are, you know, I mean, they got off to a good, if not close, start. Everyone always doubts them, and everyone always says they're too old and they're getting beat up, and they've been saying this for the past three seasons or so. Does this team still have it in the tank to make to the finals?
To the Eastern Conference Finals, yes, not to the actual NBA Finals. They're not going to get past Miami. Miami right now is the best team in the Eastern Conference, if not the NBA. Now, we don't know what's going to happen with Chris Bosh. He did suffer an injury today. I still haven't heard officially what the diagnosis is on that. But even without Bosh, with LeBron and Wade, when they are attacking the rim in which the way they do, and they're going back and forth, it's almost like you're watching a glorified practice with these guys, like playing a glorified horse game, where they're just going back and forth, scoring buckets, attacking the basket, and there's nothing you can do to stop them. And then when you have guys like Joel and Anthony being able to score points and do what they have to do, they're an unbeatable team. And I do like the Boston Celtics. I think they're a good club. I think that they have veteran leadership. They will push Miami, but I don't see them beating Miami.
Right. Well, speaking of the Heat and speaking of Miami, LeBron named the MVP this season. Is that well-deserved?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, LeBron is a transcendent, once-in-a-lifetime type player. You will not see another LeBron James come along, maybe another 30, 40 years. His combination of strength, skill, just ability, and everything that he brings to the table is amazing. This guy is a true... He's already a Hall of Famer, and I know a lot of people don't like him. A lot of people try to say he's not clutch and all these things, but the year he's had this season, when you lead your team in literally every statistical category,
right.
I mean, there's nothing he didn't do.
Right.
There's nothing the guy didn't do, and even tonight, his fourth quarter performance was amazing. I mean, the guy is great, and I really wish that fans would stop trying to compare him to Jordan or Kobe and just recognize that we're watching – one of the greatest players ever, who's just now entering his prime.
Right, right. And I mean, it's difficult in the first place, just from a pure sports, not even a basketball perspective, but a pure sports perspective, to compare him to Jordan and compare him to Kobe. I mean, he's not the same mold. He's not the same position. He's not the way you approach the game with his body is not the same.
No, it's not the same at all. And like I said, I can't think of anybody in the history of the NBA who attacks the basket the way he does. And when he's going like that, I'm not going to say he's unstoppable, because there's no such thing as somebody who's unstoppable, but he's as close to unstoppable as he gets, because what are you going to do? You're going to hope for a charge. You're not going to block his shot. You're not going to out-physical him. I mean, the only thing you can hope for when he goes to the bucket like that is that he misses it. That's it. Otherwise, you just don't have it.
Yeah, not only does he attack the basket like no one else, I mean, he gets back and plays defense 3 seconds later, so it's impressive.
He's an amazing defender. I mean, this is a guy who could have been the defensive player of the year, yet, you know, he was within like the top three or four, and he'll be first-team all-defense, first-team all-NBA, MVP. There comes a point where if you don't like LeBron James, you don't really like basketball.
Right now, he's like the Dan Marino of basketball because he doesn't have the title, but I think just about anyone would bet on him not being a Dan Marino once his career is over. We know you're a hometown Atlanta guy, and a few weeks ago, James was saying after we got off the phone with you that James is of the opinion that now that we've kind of seen just about the same thing for about five straight years with the Hawks, it might be time to just blow up that roster. Is that the way you feel?
Well, you know, it's very interesting, man. I think Boyz II Men has a song that sums it up best. It's so hard to say goodbye to yesterday. And the bottom line with this Hawks team is, I won't say blow it up, because in case you guys forget, the last time they blew up a roster, it took them 6 or 7 years to get back to this point now. So you have to be very careful when you say blow up. Here's the thing. When you blow up the roster, do you trust the Atlanta Spirit as currently constituted in order to spend the money and make the capable choices to bring in the type of players that would take you back to a championship within 2 to 5 years?
Well, as a Thrashers fan, I don't trust the Atlanta Spirit.
Yeah, Adam is shaking his head here.
You shouldn't. Based upon, you know, the experience you have, you shouldn't trust them. I mean, even with the Hawks now, you would like to think that because now they only own one team in the arena as opposed to two teams, that they could spend a full amount of money devoted to the Hawks. And with the new CBA, you know, things are really making it where teams are able to compete more. I don't think the Hawks are going to be, quote-unquote, broken up. I think the CBA, at some point, are not going to be able to sign all these guys. You got to. Josh is under contract for one more year. You got to make a decision on him.
Mm-hmm.
If it were me and it were up to me, you got to make a decision because I don't think anybody's going to sign Joe Johnson. I don't think you're going to be able to trade him. And people are saying, well, they should amnesty Joe. You can't amnesty Joe because you still have to pay him and you have to pay the next person. He just comes off the books.
Right.
Atlanta Spirit ain't going to do that.
Right. Well, moving over to the Western Conference, the Oklahoma City Thunder, they've been on vacation. I think a few of them may have taken a few trips and everything. They got done with their first round series really quick with the defending champion Mavericks. And then the Lakers clawed and scratched, and they're in this second round now bloodied, and they just barely got through in seven games. So what are we supposed to expect here? Is Oklahoma City going to be rusty, or are the Lakers just going to be worn out?
You know, it's always the old rest versus rust argument, and quite honestly, I really am not 100% sure how it's going to come out, because I can see it going both ways.
Right.
What I do like about the Lakers is now that they have Ron Artest back, they seem to be a more complete team. Guys are back playing in their proper positions, and when they do that, they're able to make the plays they need to make. The question is, how much more does Kobe have in the tank? Really, it's not about OKC. What it's about is, is Andrew Bynum ready to be an elite center every night? You don't know that because he's shown that at times he can fall off and not be ready to play. Can Gasol give you what he needs to give you consistently? Kobe's gonna be Kobe.
Right.
But the question is, can those other guys who are supposed to be high-level stars do what they're supposed to do on a night-to-night basis?
Right.
Oklahoma City has shown that they're consistent. That every night you know what Kevin Durant's going to give you. You know what Russell Westbrook's going to give you. Whether you like what he gives you or not, depending on him being a quote-unquote traditional point guard, you know what he's going to give you. You know what James Harden is going to give you off the bench. And you know what Derek Fisher is going to give you off the bench. There's no guy you can look on that team and be like, well, Serge Ibaka, you're not sure what he's going to give you.
Right.
That's why I give OKC the slight edge in this series. But I think it'll be a 6 or 7 game series.
Yeah, consistency and reliability may be the factor there. Looking up at the 1-seed Spurs and the 5-seed Clippers, who just got done with their series against the Grizzlies. Nobias, Blake Griffin, Chris Paul, Manu Ginobili, Tony Parker, Tim Duncan. This series could have 5 plays on the SportsCenter top 10 every time they have a game.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I really like this series.
I
don't like the Clippers in this series because I don't think that they're mature. Well, first of all, even if all the players were equal, the coaching matchup of Popovich versus my man over with the Clippers is not even close. I mean, Del Negro, has no shot of ever out-coaching Greg Popovich. He just doesn't. So that alone gives, to me, San Antonio, at least 1 or 2 games in that series. I think it'll be a good, hard 5-game series with the Spurs come out on top. But it will be a lot of highlights.
Right. You mentioned maturity briefly, and I suppose that every team looks immature next to the Spurs most of the time. When you were on with us a few weeks ago, you were on your way out, and we were talking about the Bobcats and the situation that Michael Jordan has on his hands there, and you said you've got a good Paul Silas story, so enlighten us with that one.
I'll have to try to PG it because, you know, I understand it's a family show. But basically, this was actually when Paul Silas was still coaching the Cleveland Cavaliers. This is LeBron James' rookie year, his first time in Atlanta.
Right.
So if you remember, LeBron was probably the biggest rookie coming in the league, probably since maybe a Wilt Chamberlain or somebody like that, to where everywhere he went, it was a circus. So first time in Atlanta, so you had media from obviously, all the TV stations from Atlanta were here. You had guys who drove up from places in Alabama and North Florida and Tennessee. So, I mean, you had a lot of
smaller media markets.
Way more than your average Hawks game.
Right.
So I'd say there's about maybe 80 or so media outside of the locker room. This is important. So after the game is over, Ira Neubel kind of storms in and out of the locker room. Right. Ira Neubel is a guy from Detroit, former Hawk, you know, real tough guy. You know what I'm saying? Like, really had a reputation being a tough guy, street kid, a grinder. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So he comes out, he's kind of upset. Next thing you know, Paul Silas comes out. Hey, what's your problem, son? And dude was like, and Ira was like, well, you know, you didn't really play me. Nobody gives an F about you. Nobody came to see you. And so then Ira was like, man, you lucky how the people are out here. As he's like backing away. And I was like, no, you're lucky how the people are out here. You hip-hop MF.
it was a reality check for how big of a star LeBron James was. That's what everybody was there for, right?
Exactly. Everybody was there for LeBron. But the backstory was, you know, Ira Neubel bought like I think 15 tickets for a game because the game had been sold out for months. I mean, and it was like the first Atlanta Hawks sellout in like a year or so. So, because this was like 2003, the Hawks were still really bad.
No, they were terrible, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they were really bad, really struggling. It's come off a 13-win season. This was before Mike Woodson. This was, if I'm correct, Terry Stotts was still the head coach. I mean, this was a bad time for the Hawks. So, you know, for them to have a sellout, and he actually bought all these tickets. So he bought, you know, somewhere between 15 and 20 tickets to play like 8 minutes. So he was pretty upset. But Paul Silas was like, first of all, I don't ever question the amount of playing time I give you.
Right.
And then right after that, you know, he got all upset, yelled at the guys. Neubel really kind of ran off. Silas comes out, does his post-game press conference. Now, the backstory is, after all this, a couple months later, they come back for their second visit. You know, anybody who knows, you know, Eastern Conference teams normally come twice.
Right, right.
The East City, Western Conference teams come once. So they come back, and so, well, hey, Coach Silas, what's up, man? How you doing? Well, Coach, man, you know, I got to ask you, man. If Ira Neubel was a hip-hop MF, what's that make you?
And
then he says, you know what? I'm a bebop MF.
That's classic.
And ever since then, to this day, you know, as long as I'm in the journalist, whenever I see Silas, he's like, oh, you know, you one of those hip-hop MFs too. At least I'm not a bebop MF. And that's just him. And, to this day, him and Ira Neubel have a great relationship. Silas is old school, old man crazy. His hands are huge. When he shakes your hand, it's like you're about to break your wrist. He'll be missed in the NBA, to say the least.
Yeah, that's a great story, and you said they were yelling back and forth at each other the first time that the other was lucky. I think that they both may have been lucky that there weren't any cameras pointed at them, or you know, nothing was rolling there with all those media personnel in the hallway. So
yeah, and see, it is funny. It's funny you say that because this was 2003, and you know there were a ton of us out there. I mean, there were a lot of people out there, and a lot of you know they had like fans that come down, and it's just amazing how much our society has changed where, you know, nobody was thinking, oh, let me get this on my camera phone or let me, you know, post this on YouTube. Now, that type of things happen. It's going viral within like 5 minutes. It's just amazing how much things have changed.
That would have been a disaster in the age of smartphones after 2007. Nobias, we really appreciate it. We'll get you back on soon as the NBA playoffs progress. Great stuff, man. Thanks again.
Man, gentlemen, thank you so much.
All right, thanks, man. Well, that's a classic story there. And like we said, he just mentioned, if this was the age of smartphones or there's 80 media personnel, you've been in the basement of Phillips Arena with me before. And if there's 80 people in that hallway, it was probably pretty crowded. And that was probably quite the scene.
Yeah.
And
I don't think the Motorola Razr had the capabilities.
No, not then. But anyway, we've got Hottie and Naughty coming up next, and believe it or not, James is not going to be a naughty for his flat tire, but we've got some juicy ones coming up next on the Backseat Sports Podcast.
You're listening to the Backseat Sports Podcast with Zach Diodati and James Troiano. Email us at backseatsports@gmail.com or hit us on Twitter at backseatzach or at backseatj.
Ah, that is on Twitter at backseatzach and at James Troiano.
Ah.
T T-R-O-I-A-N-O.
I always goof up his last name.
You've been his friend for about 12 years.
I know.
So you're a naughty for not being a good friend.
And I'm not good with birthdays.
Yeah, this is Hottie and Naughty, our first Hottie of the Week. Tully, we went over this one earlier, and the Cubs ball girl at Wrigley Field, okay, on Monday's game between the Cubs and the Braves, apparently wrote down her name and number on a little note card and handed it to a Wrigley security guard and had him take it over to a Braves pitcher. Okay, when the video hit the internet of her doing that, that's what everyone assumed she was doing.
Right.
It turns out there was a fan on the first base side stands that wanted to give her that wanted her name and number. So she had the security guard go back over to that fan and write down "no thanks" with no number.
Strike out there, buddy. Struck out with her.
Grounded into a double play.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was that's not as fun as the original story.
Couldn't even get to first base with her, man.
No. Now, you got rejected by a girl wearing a baseball uniform. If you look up the video, she is kind of cute, but she's wearing a baseball helmet and, you know, she's wearing the clothes that the guys that you came to see you're wearing. Right. So it's a little rough. But, hey, she's a hottie for, you know, rolling with the punches there.
Right.
And working that situation out. Our first naughty of the week is Cole Hamels. Now, it's lovely that James isn't here to argue this one because he would. Phillies pitcher Cole Hamels. I prefer to call him Nicole Hamels. And again, James isn't here to argue that one.
We can do it all day long.
Yeah, and last Sunday, a week ago, this happened at the worst time for us because it was a week ago.
Everything good
tonight.
Happens on a Monday. Since we started doing our show.
And so he admittedly intentionally plunked Bryce Harper, 19-year-old rookie for the Nationals, in that game last Sunday night, and he got a 5-game suspension. Tully, I know you understand this, but think about it for a second. A 5-game suspension for a pitcher means your next start gets moved back one day. And I hate that. That is such a joke. And there's really no better way to do it. It's difficult. You can't say somebody.
Can
you just fine them? I think they did get fined. I don't think it was anything major. I wish they could just say, hey, one guy on your team has to pitch 5 times before you play again. That's a real 5-game suspension. Yeah. But then that guy could get hurt.
Okay, wait, was he suspended after he had come out and said, oh, yeah,
he said it right after the game. Night, he said, I meant to hit him.
Oh, okay.
So he got suspended for 5 games. I think he's pitched again since then. So there you go.
And that was Monday.
Yeah, our first hottie, our second hottie, is Josh Hamilton. We talked to James about him earlier. This dude is on fire. James gave us some of his stats. He's batting like 400. I think he's got 20 home runs.
There's nobody even close, really. It's almost like Wade Gretzky records. He is on an insane pace.
And on Wednesday, against, I believe it was the Angels, he hit 4 home runs in 1 game.
Yeah.
And he also had a double. Like, he only had a double in one of those at-bats after hitting 4 home runs. No one had done that, I think, in the AL ever. May not have my stats there, right? But a lot of baseball pundits are calling this the best night in AL history for a batter. Just unbelievable. 4 home runs. At some point, you got to think they're going to intentionally walk him. That's allowed. They can do that if they want. Our second naughty of the week is Bryce Harper. Look, he just showed back up. Now he got plunked by Cole Hamels a week ago. And then on Friday night's game, he was really, really mad about grounding to short. That happens. If you're a baseball player, you're going to have to get used to grounding to short every once in a while. Couldn't run out that play and went to the dugout and took one of his bats, slammed it against the wall, and injured himself.
Yeah, you don't have to finish 10th grade science to figure out what's going to happen next.
The bat snapped back, hit him in the face, and he goes back out there with a very bloody left side of the head.
Looking stupid.
Yeah, well, look, at this rate, he's 19. At this rate, he's going to have to retire when he is 24 because he's been flying into outfield walls, making catches, getting intentionally plunked by pitchers, cutting up his face with a baseball bat. The dude is not going to make it past 25.
No.
So that's Bryce. He needs to slow down. Rick Ankiel was out there telling him he needs to chill. The guy plays center field next to him. Tully, another naughty is Joey Barton. This is a Queens Park Rangers defender, midfielder out there. In that legendary, already classic game between Queens Park and Manchester City, He thought that the officials weren't looking, and right on the edge of the 18-yard box, elbowed a City player under the chin and got red carded for that. And that is the worst possible spot to get red carded because you were trying to avoid relegation. This is a huge game.
Yeah.
And the game was 1-1 at that point.
Yeah.
And he elbows a guy in the chin. That is dumb.
I mean, the guy's just he's just so dumb. He's every team he's been on, he's done something like that.
So here's what he says to himself after he gets red carded. That's not enough for me. This is the last game of the season. I'm going to kick someone in the back of the leg on my way out.
Yeah.
So he's on. He's leaving the field as he has to after being red carded, and then kicks another guy completely uninvolved.
Yeah.
Kicks another guy on his way off. What are they going to do? You can't red card him again.
I don't know if you heard Ian Dark, the commentator for that game, with Steve McManaman talking about that, how he is lucky. Because if that, if they would have, the other team had not lost or whatever, because Queens Park stayed up.
They did. Because Bolton
lost,
I believe.
Yes. Luckily. Yeah. If they wouldn't have done that, that would have been a $30 million red card.
Oh, because sure.
Because they would have got relegated.
Yeah.
You have
and they
no
would have
idea.
Made the same profits in the second division or the first division or whatever next year. Yeah, and I to be honest, though, when he made that extra kick after being red carded, I honestly think what he was trying to do was provoke a City player to do something to him and then get red carded.
I mean, that guy honestly is a hooligan.
Well, it may be a dumb idea, but it was if it was a different guy with another temper, it may have been dumb enough to work. Someone could have retaliated.
Oh, yeah.
So credit to the City players. They kept their composure there because someone could have punched him.
If you would have done it to Baratelli, wasn't on the
no, he wasn't.
The pitch that time. But yeah, if he would have done it to Mario Baratelli, all-out brawl would have been
right, and if that's what he was trying to do, it may have worked. Yeah. So I think that was what he was trying to do, but still very, very stupid.
Yeah.
Our last hottie of the week is, well, Tully, Manchester City.
Dude, you know what? I know it's Manchester City, you know, and obviously what happened today, right?
Right.
The way in which they won.
Yeah.
I can't even, okay, because we all know I'm a big Toronto Maple Leafs fan, right?
Yeah.
And the last time City won the league was 68. The last time the Leafs won the Stanley Cup
67.
Was 67.
Yeah.
So 40, 45 years, something like that. Very long time. The way in which it was done, they were down 2-1. Going into stoppage time.
Mm-hmm.
And again, Ian Dark, the commentator, is what he was saying. Going into stoppage time, they actually had fans in front of them at the booth crying.
Like it was the end.
Crying. Yeah. It was because it was, oh my God, not again. Here we go. Crying.
Yeah.
And then within, 2 minutes, they had won. I mean, the euphoria that a fan, I can't
you're
even
not
explain.
Even a complete stranger to that kind of ending because in the 99 Champions League final, Manchester United did that to Bayern Munich. Now, some would argue that winning the Champions League is the biggest professional thing you can win.
The difference between that was a great victory. It was, but the difference between Manchester United,
they've won other things.
City has done nothing. All those years.
You're right. Because if Bayern Munich had held on and beat you guys in that 99 match in the Champions League, you probably could have said, you know, we'll win something else. There will be other days.
And we did.
If City had not won today, those fans may have told themselves, it is not our lot in life to win the Premier League.
I am not joking. I'm being dead serious right now. Today is probably the happiest day
on that
in
side of
many,
Manchester.
Many people's lives for those fans.
Well, Manchester City, that was the happiest place on earth today.
It was. So, and you know what? The city of Manchester, not Manchester City, the city of Manchester finished number one and number two.
Yeah, well,
Manchester, you could say, would be, I guess, the capital of the football.
Well, it is a lot of other times. But that was Hottie and Naughty. So for James Troiano, as he joined us earlier, I'm Zach Diodati. Adam Tully with me as always. That's the Backseat Sports Podcast. Whether you listen on iTunes or RadioExiles.com, we really appreciate you listening. We will see you next week.